window.
Echt? Wie sieht denn das aus? Ach du lieber Himmel, muss das sein? Sieht ja furchtbar aus. Ist das richtig so? Feels strange ankommen. I have to. Okay. Na. Dann. Ja, jetzt mal, ja, Desktop. Not so colorful, but works. Okay. Also ich darf nicht nach hier vorne laufen. So geht nicht. So? Nein? Echt? Boah. So, okay, I have to stay here. Don't move. My face is not so important, I think. Hopefully the slides are more important. The voice. You know, I'm the voice of Germany. Welcome. No, you don't want that I start singing. I told some of my students that they should search for the stream, but not they should, but they can search for the stream if they're interested in watching me again. Oh. Ja. Ja, also ich, also nicht wundern, wenn ich dann um 12 Uhr tatsächlich ganz pünktlich hier losrenne. Weil um 20 nach unten der Bus fährt. 20 nach 12 und den muss ich kriegen. Das heißt, ich gucke, dass ich eine Punktlandung hinbekomme. Ein bisschen vor 12, vielleicht sogar durch bin. Wenn da noch Fragen sind, aber wenn da keine Fragen sind, bin ich auch nicht sauer, dann kann ich das mal direkt los. Ja. So, du hast hier ganz frisch angefangen. Und wie ist die Umstellung von aus den Bergen hierhin? Wobei hier sind ja auch einige Berge. Oh. Achso, okay. Was ist nur da für eine Karte? Achso, was bist du, ne? Der Dunkel. Ja. Ja. Ist ja gut aufgestellt. So wie es aussieht. Loslegen. Ah, no. Perfekt. Okay, yeah. Thanks, Laura, for the introduction. Maybe again. My name is Luigi Loiacono. Thank you for joining. Hope I can show you something interesting in the domain of REST-based services and security of REST-based services. I come from the Cologne University of Applied Sciences. I've worked before in different research labs industry-wise and worked a lot in the domain of services security. But I mean, before it was a bit technologically different. Not REST-based, but more SOAP-based. But as we see that REST is gaining traction here, of course, let's say also security demands and requirements increase as well. And today I would like to talk a bit about what REST In West-based system, what kind of security is available and what kind of security should be available, at least from, let's say, my point of view, in order to be able to master the challenges which these systems include. Okay, so the agenda for today's talk is like this. We will start with talking about, first of all, the term REST. Why is this? I think there's a lot of misinterpretation of the term outside in the heads of the people, so it's always important to really set the scenes and start defining what really REST is again and again, in order to have a common ground to start from, because REST at the end is nothing more than an architectural style, nothing more. It's very abstract, it's a concept, and we will learn about it in the first quarter of this talk. Then we will somehow show what REST can be used for example, in combination with the HTTP protocol. You can build what I will call RESTful HTTP or REST-based web services. So this is one incarnation of the REST concept based on web technologies, and you get something which is called RESTful, or what we call RESTful HTTP or RESTful web services. So then we will be able to, of course, somehow build service systems based on these concepts in combination with some technologies we are choosing. And then comes the question, how can we secure these kind of systems? And why do they need to be secured, and how? And why shouldn't we be able to use something which is already available, namely the web service security, from a domain which has been quite evolved over the time and it's quite mature? So, of course, you can pose the question, is there something suitable already available which we would be able to use here as well? But as the last point of the agenda summer already shows, is that from our point of view, what's available is not enough or not suitable enough for meeting the REST principles or the properties a REST-based system should have. So we, let's say, somehow advocate for thinking about having something more adequate for the REST world itself, what we call REST security, which should be proper security at the proper layer. Okay, so this is the agenda which will guide the talk, and we will start with somehow setting the scene, giving the foundation of the talk, which is introducing the REST architectural style. And REST is nothing else like a guideline which helps you if you want to design distributed systems that scale at large. If this is your design goal, then you should reconsider or should consider REST as one guideline to build such system. And that's it. And I would like to explain afterwards what's inside this guideline. But as you already, let's say, get the feeling for, there's nothing specific inside. It's a very abstract guideline saying what you have to do in order to reach the goal, designing distributed system which scale at large. That's it. The term was coined by Roy Thomas Fielding in his PhD thesis. And it stands for representational state transfer. And this already, let's say, shows some of the important concepts in the REST architectural style, representational state transfer. We will come to this at a later stage. So, but what is something important for me you should remember is that it is a concept. It is very something very abstract. It has nothing to do with any concrete technology. It is a guideline which you can use as a developer if you have the goal to develop a distributed system that should scale at large. The largest REST-based system available, I think you know it all, and this is maybe also somehow the reason for misinterpretations. The largest REST-based system available at the moment is, of course, the web itself. The web is REST-based, is RESTful, it is, let's say, designed according to the REST principles, and this is the largest REST-based systems we have. And this is something also you can retrieve from the PhD thesis of Royal Fielding itself, where you can find that REST is intended to evoke an image of how a well-designed web application behaves. And this is also I think sometimes the source for these misunderstandings. It's very, of course, somehow related to the web, and even Roy Fielding is somehow in his PhD thesis pointing to this, but from an abstract point of view, it's really just a concept. You can map it to web technologies and you get something which maybe is the web today, but you can also instantiate something else, or instantiate by different technologies, and you get other service systems out of it which are maybe not web based. And we will come to this later. Okay, but this is what it is, and it's of course somehow also used in other scenarios, not only, let's say, to describe how web application works, but you can use this concept also in service-oriented architectures, which is let's say, concept as well, well established in I think in the IT landscape already. With this concept, you build distributed systems out of software services. You orchestrate the application out of a lot of services, and these services can be distributed. They're not, let's say, all in-house, all under your control. You have a lot of partners providing these services, and you mesh up your application by using all of these services provided by somebody. And you somehow get the feeling that if you build such a system, then these systems will include lots of security requirements. But you are engaged with external partners, you're interacting with others, you're transferring data between premises. All these, of course, depending on the application, depending on the data, will result in a different kind of security requirements here. Until recently, such systems have been developed with a stack of technologies surrounding a protocol called SOAP, and this was for a long time the dominant choice. But recently, REST-based web services are gaining traction here. REST-based web services, not the REST concept, but if you, let's say, instantiate the REST concept with web technologies and you build services, web-based services. Then you can, of course, build SOAR systems with it, and REST is gaining traction here. Okay, but from all of this, there comes a lot of misunderstandings. What REST is it's an architectural style, and it's somehow composed out of constraints. It sets some constraints, and if you are, let's say, willing to follow these constraints, the promise is you will get a system, a service system, that scale at large. And the constraints REST sets, and that's really the core of the concept. And you see, there's no technology inside; there are just constraints, and there are these five which are mandatory, which are somehow straightforward. You have to have to follow the client-server model. You have to implement as the service messages need to be stateless, they need to be cacheable, you have to implement a uniform interface, and your system should be able to be layered out of different layers. So in order to explain these constraints a bit more, let's say, visually, we came up with somehow an architecture showing this main concept. In one big picture, you see there are two parts, the REST client and the REST server. So you see here is the one constraint: you build your system according to the client server model. Then the client issues a request, and this request needs to have some information. It needs to have include an action and then including an identifier, and this identifier will, let's say, identify a remote resource, and the action you specify will be, let's say, also executed on this resource. The action is somehow which is defined by the uniform interface on the server side. The uniform interface is a set of actions you define which should be able to be executed on your resources. There's no, let's say, a further definition in the PhD thesis of Roy Fielding on these actions. He just says there need to be some action, and you can probably define the actions you require as you need for your application. Then comes the processing of the resources. You see here examples for resources. Then the server side somehow constructs a response that is sent back, and the response needs to contain a state, and it will somehow, maybe in some cases, return also a resource. And the resource is always returned in some form of representation. So this is one term of the representational state transfer. Resources are returned in some representation. It's independent of what representation it can be. It can be many representations you can think of. HTML, XML, JSON, what you can think of. The response then will include hyperlinks in some form. And these hyperlinks are somehow the you can think of the client being a state machine, and he will receive with the response a new state, and this state includes hyperlinks to other states. So he can now choose from the set of links he receives here which one to choose next. And by this he will issue a request, and again you will be in this cycle, and you will see that the state transfer in the term REST doesn't have to do something with transferring something. It's more in the sense of a virtual state machine. The client will be set in a new state by the response and will be able to choose among the available links what's the next state. So this somehow explains, I guess, how the REST architecture, the REST concept work, and you see it's not mapped to any technology yet. So you are free to choose how to implement this with any suitable technology stack you can think of. Well, but what you get with the constraints, you get a checklist, and you have to see if you're looking for a suitable technology stack to choose, what technology fulfills all the constraints REST sets in order to choose something suitable. Okay, by now I hope you should be able to see that REST doesn't have to do something with the web directly. It doesn't have to do something with HTTP directly. It's an abstract concept. It is not a standard. Sometimes it's also helpful to describe what it is not. It's not a standard. You cannot find anything on it at W3C or IETF or elsewhere. And it's not relying on any particular web standard. Although, yeah, you can, of course, if you take this concept and you want to instantiate it with web technologies, you can choose from these because they are suitable for implementing REST-based systems. And if you do so, if you choose to implement a REST-based system with web technologies, you will come up what we will call, you use RESTful HTTP to implement REST-based web services. And we choose different terms for it in order not to get somehow conflicted with the REST term. So REST is a concept, and if you apply it or if you implement it with web technologies, HTTP, URI, and so forth, you will come up what we call REST-based web services. Okay, so that's also the main meaning of this slide. You see a lot of misunderstandings when you talk to people about REST. A lot of people really say REST is the same as HTTP and web applications. There is somehow this kind of fuzzy understanding of it, but that was one thing I wanted to show is that it is a clear distinguishing point between the REST concept and how you implement it. After all, if you implemented it with web technologies, you do something like here. You get RESTful HTTP and you get REST-based web services. To show how to use this checklist, you can see, I mean, is HTTP really something RESTful? Can you implement REST-based system with it? You go along the line and see if it is based on the client-server model. It is. If it is stateless, it is. If messages can be cached, they can be cached. That's also something which is the core for the scalability at the end. If it implements an uniform interface, it does so by defining 7 methods within the HTTP protocol. You have the methods get, head, options, post, put, patch, and delete. These are the actions you get if you implement REST with HTTP, and I will show you how this will work later on. And to identify the resources, this was something we had also in the abstract image before. HTTP makes use of URIs, yeah. And for the resource by representation, we need something which is data format agnostic, since REST says that a resource can be represented in different formats. This is also something HTTP offers you. So you go, make the checks and see all fulfilled, so I can use HTTP to implement REST-based systems. And if you take the picture again, now everything comes together. You see that now I have attached to the abstract concepts implementations you can get or you can do with HTTP. So you have the resource actions can be the actions you get from HTTP. The resource identifier is something you can build with a URI, and then you can issue such a request which will perform this action on this resource. And then the actions somehow are mapped to a more abstract action. So a POST is used to create a resource, a GET is used to read a resource, a PUT is used to update a resource, DELETE is used to delete a resource, and you see that HTTP offers you something which is known from the database domain. You have this CRUD options here, which gives you the possibility to manage resources via this uniform interface. Okay, then the resource processing is something you implement, and then you get here the resource state is something you get from the status code of HTTP, and the resource presentations can be manifold since HTTP is data format agnostic. So you can send out whatever the client requests, HTML, XML, JSON, whatever is needed. Okay, so this is the abstract model with an implementation or instantiation example based on HTTP URI, and then you get something which we call RESTful HTTP or REST-based web services. This is the technology you can use to implement these kinds of things. So now we have web services. They are different from the web services used before, which were more built on SOAP, but these are more lightweight, more easy to implement, they perform better, they scale better, so there's a lot of interest in implementing web services based on these technologies recently, and concepts. So now comes also the question with this, what can we do on the security side here? And as I said, there is already a quite evolved and mature security stack for what have been used before to implement services. Services based on SOAP. So you have the SOAP Foundation, and they have here different standards which provides you with message security and different things on defining privacy and security policies, federate distinct systems in order to have a common ground to authenticate and authorize entities in these distributed systems. So if you need to build such service systems, and if they need to be distributed, and you have a lot of different partners involved, and you have very high security demands, you will currently use maybe this one still to implement such system, because you get a mature tool chain, a security box to implement this kind of things. If you look at the REST domain and see what's available there, it looks a bit different. So the REST Foundations is available, message security is partly available. All the rest is blank, so there's nothing available at all. You can find something in the authorization area as well, but far from being complete, at least from our point of view. So there needs to be implemented according technologies in order to be able to build REST-based web services with the same security level or security mechanisms as for SOAP-based systems. Now the question, of course, can be, why reinventing the wheel? We have this mature stack. Why don't you simply use technologies out of this stack to secure REST-based web services? But this is not, let's say,
so easily possible, and I will show you why. If you take a closer look, you will see that RESTful web services are specific, at least in comparison to SOAP-based web services. The first is they're not self-contained. The messages are not self-contained, meaning you don't have one, let's say, central data structure where all the control data, all the metadata, all the resource representations are somehow contained, and you can apply the protection on this centralized data structure. This is not feasible. It's not available. In SOAP-based web services, you have something like this. This is a self-contained data structure. It's a SOAP envelope. It's an XML data structure. It contains a header. Here comes the control data. Here comes the metadata. It contains the body which takes the payload, the resource representation, for example. And you can secure this with the mechanism you have, which is, since this is one contained data structure. If you look at the REST world, it's not something which is self-contained. You have control and metadata here, and you have the resource representation here, and this is totally different. And it's not even that it is the case that here you always have HTTP. And you can, well, this is the next slide. You can have whatever protocol you want, but this is the first challenge or the first distinguishing point towards an argumentation that the security which is available does not fulfill the requirements for REST. So next is the service protocol is something which is not defined for REST. It can be anything. If you build it with REST, with HTTP, you get this RESTful HTTP, and you have this protocol here, and you have the resource representation, but there are other options. One interesting option is you instantiate the REST concept with something which is called CoAP, which is a protocol currently being under development. It's still a draft in the IETF, which is a protocol used for services in the Internet of Things world. Now you can build, let's say, REST-based service environments for Internet of Things systems. So it's not, let's say, as large scale as the web at the end, but maybe you have a fairly large network of very small resource-constrained devices which you would like to control, to work with in a REST-based manner. So you somehow need to instantiate REST with this protocol, and then you come up with this. And you see that, obviously, control and metadata are somewhere else. And you need to somehow apply protections here. And in the future, maybe there comes something else. Well, maybe there are other protocols which can be used for REST-based implementations. And then you will start and have this question again, how to secure, how to apply security here and here. Another issue arises from the data format agnostic, since it is not depending on any specific data format. You can have whatever you see here, plus, 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 in the resource representation. And if you require a security here, you need to somehow see what's available for the resource representation you are choosing. If you're choosing XML, of course, you can apply XML security to protect the resource representation. If you're choosing JSON, which is more popular because, of course, again, it's more lightweight, allows you to implement more efficient systems, then you will choose something which is also very became a draft only recently, I think last week, which is called JavaScript Object Signing and Encryption. So you can apply signature and encryption schemes to JSON data structures. Yeah, but maybe for some representations you will lack such a feature, and you need to decide how to deal with this. And at the end, the last argument towards a more applied, more proper security for REST is that such a system consists of multiple layers. So a common argument you always get if you talk about REST and you want to secure REST, people tend to say apply TLS, a transport-oriented security, and you're done. That's an easy answer, fairly easy. Maybe sometimes it's really something you can
can live with, but you still need to consider that such a system is layered, so you don't have simply these two entities, the server and the client, but you can have a lot of also transparent components in between, which do very specific things in order also to be able to promote these features like scalability, cacheability, and things like this. Now you will have a lot of systems in between, which then, of course, if you use transport security only, will be able to access the exchanged messages and manipulate them as they wish. So in some cases, this will be not enough, and you are really seeking for a protection which is attached to the message and will be not, let's say, released in these middle systems, intermediate systems. Hope this was motivation enough to see that something required, which will cause REST security is needed. At least this was our conclusion out of this analysis. So we set out to see what's available, and then of course, if you think about REST security, if you, let's say, introduce security in the system, what you need to be aware of, besides the things we talked about, is that you don't destroy the core principles, the core constraints. So if you apply security here, it still needs to be scalable, it still needs to be cacheable, and so forth and so on. So as initial point, we started again with this one here, and we see that it's not much available. So maybe we will focus first on this to see what we can do here, and how evolved research and development is in this stage, in this layer, and what we can propose here. So if you go here again, so we are also concentrating also only on this part, on the HTTP part, because the this one is very current. There's not much work available so far. So we focused on the HTTP, on the REST-based web services. And if you look what's available, so you don't find many things, but you find signatures. So people try to authenticate REST-based web service accesses. So if you have a REST API which contains services which should not be able to not be accessible to the public, you're looking for an authentication and access control stream, and somehow you need to sign the messages. So this is something you will find at the moment also in the literature and in practical environments. So we set out to analyze this first, but our approach was a bit different. So we wanted really to respect this. You have an abstract notion of a guideline, of an architectural style, and you have different instantiation from it. And we set out to see, is there something we can do here on this abstract level first? Can we, let's say, define a REST message authentication scheme on this level, which from our point of view is the right level to start? If you are somehow designed a means how to secure on a REST message on this level, then you will be able to instantiate it for whatever instantiation you require. But this is something, and you can do guided. You have somehow a guideline from this abstract notion here, which helps you mapping the security means to a real world protocol. And this is something then you can do here again and here again, and you always end up hopefully with the same set of security for each of the different instantiations. That was the idea, and we followed this approach. So we first defined in an abstract way a security for a REST message, then we derived an instantiation for RESTful HTTP, and then we set out and see what's available in the literature on this, what's available in standardization on this, what's available in practical environments on this. And we somehow compared our findings or our developments with what's there as related work. So I skip this one here, because let's say not I don't have the time for it, but as you see, I've especially I've included a reference to this work. If you're interested in the details, you can go and fetch this publication. I would like to show how the instantiation to HTTP at the end looks like, and then I will show the comparison with the available work to see that really it's a quite diverse view at the moment how to sign a RESTful HTTP message. So we came up with something like this. So we will construct a large string. That's I mean, from a approach viewpoint, something everyone is doing. Everyone constructs a large string out of something which is inside the HTTP protocol header and the request line. You take maybe some time variant parameter in order to protect against replay attacks, to have the freshness of your message, and then you will take the method, and you will take the request target, you will take the HTTP version, you will have other headers. This also depend on the method which is used here, and then you will hash the body and apply this to the string as well. This is something you do for the request, and something similar is done for the response here as well. So this is something we derived from our abstract definition on how to sign a REST message. As an example, here is a put message. Everything which is in bold here is signed with our approach. So we recognize the request, we also recognize the response, and nearly everything is bold here. But this is the case since we only choose the very sensitive headers here, for the example. Now you can have lots of other headers in the protocol which won't be, let's say, safeguarded by the signature. But I choose this message because this message will appear now in comparison to the state of the art, and you will see how differently the other related work deals with this signing of HTTP messages. We will start with HP, Google, and Microsoft. They do all the same. They have a fixed pattern for what needs to be signed. Fixed pattern means that it's not extensible. What they define needs to be signed, that's it. You're not, let's say, able as a developer to add something. Say, okay, I have a different, a very specific application. I have application-specific header. And from my point of view, they also need to be signed. This is not something you can do with this approach. What is signed is a timestamp. These things are not discovered, considered. The hash of the body is optional. This is something you can choose to sign or not. And the response is not signed in all of these three systems. We analyzed the REST APIs from the storage systems of these vendors. It's all they all have in the cloud storage systems. They all have a very equivalent API, and they all have, of course, because I mean you are storing your data into the cloud, they all have protection means in terms of a signature. And that's the way they are somehow promoting the signature to the requests. Okay, you see something. Some of these things are missing, especially here. Maybe the cache control things are missing here, and the response as well. Keep this in mind. In order to motivate our solution, we will have some possible attack vectors at the end, which can be exploited maybe. While exploiting that some of these things here are not safeguarded by a signature. Amazon is doing they are a bit better here in the sense that they are allowed to add a list of headers which are included in the signature. So as a developer, you have a bigger freedom. Some of the things are of course mandatory. So the timestamp is mandatory. The host header is mandatory. The hash of the body is mandatory, which goes in a specific header here, which is this one. This will carry the hash of the body here. It's mandatory. The other three, the hash of the body was optional, but the response here is not signed as well as for the first three. But you can, let's say, at least add to this list of headers which should be included in the signature.
Okay, these were the analysis of the I say four big players in the cloud regarding also storage services and their REST APIs. Then we looked at what's available in standardization. There's not much. CITF have a draft which is called signing HTTP messages. It's still a draft. It remained a draft, so there's no work going on here anymore. But just to, let's say, summarize what the last version of the draft says, it also contains a list of headers where you can extend things which need to be safeguarded by the signature. The only mandatory part is a timestamp, which is a date header. This one here goes in. And a hash of body is optional, and the response is also not signed. Then we looked at different other standards. OAuth version 1 is a standard which is more related to authorization of web services, but also they somehow, let's say, defined how HTTP message needs to be signed for this purpose. They have a fixed pattern, so again, if you have something here which you would like to be protected by the signature as well, you won't be able to define such. The only mandatory part is the time, the time variant parameter, and you have then a specific OAuth related parameters which needs to be included in the signature. Again, here either the body nor the response are signed. The situation in version 2, which is the more broader used standard, is even worse. Contains from a security point of view, they rely on TLS only, so the signature part here is quite low. From our viewpoint, there's only one work in the literature, in the scientific literature available, which deals with message security for RESTful services. Sam et al. Defines a scheme how to sign requests and responses. They leave out importantly, they leave out the action out of the signature, which might be severe, and the paper is not very detailed, so there are somehow also miss a lot of explanation how several things really needs to be handled in the signature generation and signature verification. So it seems like a lot of people are doing it, so a lot of people think it is important to have these kind of safeguards for REST messages, but all of them are somehow doing it on their own. Many of course of these things are somehow grown, they come out of bigger internet companies, but none of them really did it like we did in a more methodological way. You first go see, understand the abstract style, and you define then mechanisms for on this abstraction layer. And then you are able to take this as a guideline to derive concrete security implementations for concrete environments. We think that our approach is maybe have some advantages, at least in comparison to the other, because we see some possible attacks. If you reconsider what have been left out of the signature protection, and if you see how an attacker might be able then to change these kind of things and change obviously the semantic of requests totally. It's quite impressive, I think. I mean, if you take this as an original request, which is something a put on a certain resource, and there is a protected let's say also resource representation in this request. And as a attacker, you will be able to gain access to this message, and essentially is this part and some other parts are not protected by a signature, you will be able to simply change them, and then you get a request which will be maybe executed by a web service and will result in an action you don't really would like to have, right? So from something legitimate, you can delete a resource on a cloud storage service. Yeah, the same maybe for this one here. This is if you, let's say, will be able to get a request and will be able to change small parts of this request. Others will be more related to the response. Yeah, if this would be the legitimate response, you are somehow located to a new resource which has been created. An attacker would be able, if this location header is not secured, will be able to redirect you to something somewhere else. And this will be the hyperlink. Yeah, you are your client, if you remember, will change the state. You get the hyperlink, which will be executed, and you will then end up here. And from this, you will probably get other states which will lead you in a position you don't want to end up. The same is here. This is an interesting attack where you include a cache control header, and you can do something like a cache poisoning if you want to on the client side. Yeah, you can make a resource which is included here as permanently available at the client, so he won't, in subsequent requests, won't get a fresh resource anymore if you will be able to do this. And if you remember, really, some of the schemes we looked at left out this or this from the signature protection. Ours not, because we had a different approach. We were really first concentrating on the abstract layer, and we're defining what's important, what do we have on important control data, important metadata. Last attack I would like to present, if you don't consider the content links. This was an easy one. This will easily end up in a denial of service attack. Still, the TCP connections of, let's say, the server will be open for a while. You're waiting for the remaining 20 bytes, and if you do this quite a long time, it might be possible to bring the system in a state which is not be able to serve any requests anymore. So I'm done. Thank you for your attention. To conclude, I think, again, REST, not to confuse it with HTTP and web, is an abstract style which helps you as a developer to design distributed system which can scale at large. We have different options to implement this. HTTP URI is one. CoAP is another one which will appear in the future, I think, and which will help you to build Internet of Things services. RESTful Internet of Things services. And if you go think about security, then from our point of view, you need to go to the abstract layer first, think about the security that does not destroy the constraints, which is a hard thing to reach, I think. If you take the next step, we just signed a message. If you want to encrypt the message, how can you encrypt the message that still remains cacheable, for example, is a challenge. And there are a lot of other challenges on the way to build a REST security stack which looks like the one we already have for SOAP. But I think this is the ultimate goal we need to reach if we want to provide REST-based services in the future with an adequate security. Okay, so thanks a lot, and I'm afraid there's not much time for questions, but if I run fast to catch my bus, maybe there's still time for one or two questions. No, no. Then I mean, really, you go. If I'm allowed to jump back, you really go here and consider the security really on this layer of abstraction, and you consider what you need to do on the control data, the metadata, the resource representations, without destroying the constraints. And then you can somehow, this is something we did here, and if you have this and you have a guideline, and with this guideline, then you can say, now I know what I need to protect. And then you go here, and then you know everything which is described abstract here gets concrete if you implement it here. And then you can say how to implement everything you defined on this layer with HTTP. And then you can do the same thing here as well. You take the same guideline here, and then you can think of how to secure a CoAP protocol. And then the hope is that you, at the end, reach something which has the same security level. You don't miss anything. You don't miss a control header. You don't miss an something in the response, because you do it very with a clear methodology. I think this is the idea. The server should be stateless, yeah. Yeah, I mean, in an ideal case, you should try to keep the server stateless, in order also to be able to scale in the way you would like to. But sometimes it's not possible. You're totally right. Sometimes it's not possible, and you need to have something like a session here. So I put it in this brackets in order to say this is something optional, but sometimes you need it, and this will of course somehow break the stateless thing. But the thing here is to mention this is really something Roy Fielding understands as you're put with a response, you're putting the client into a new state, and the response contains hyperlinks. And these hyperlinks are the set of the new state changes, the possible state changes the client now has. He will activate one, and then he will be in this circle again. It will obtain a response. The response will again include a set of hyperlinks, a set of state changes if you want to, and then the client can then choose again, and you will be here in this cycle. And this is the way Roy Fielding describes this distributed algorithm on the client side. That's the reason why it appears here, but it doesn't appear there. Okay. I'm sorry. I have to, due to time.